All right, guys. Episode 8, Summer of Miles. It is great to be back with you. We are week of Sir Walter. Now, if you're here in Raleigh, you know that the weather is phenomenal. Literally fall-like right now. So this is just a good omen for what we have to look forward to on Friday night. We are coming off probably some of our best episodes. We have already had, you know, even during this month of July leading into Sir Walter, had some incredible folks come on and been able to deal with some great topics. And I think we're just up in our game as we, of course, had Andrew Colley on this week, and looking forward to who our special guest. I'll let Pat give you the heads up on here in a second. But I'll tell you, we've just had folks who are really excited about what we're doing, willing to come on here, share what they're about, talk running, talk about some things that matter, and also share some incredible insight. And I just, man, it's been an honor to be a part here, and you know, I would be remiss if I didn't say it's an honor to get to sit here on this beautiful evening with my co-host Pat Price. So, Pat, thanks for letting me lead out on episode 8. But y'all, Pat Price, Pat, talk to us. Talk to me about what we're doing right now.
What we're doing right now is we're sitting right outside the track at Meredith College, just taking it in. It's Tuesday night, pretty late, 73 degrees. Just beautiful. This would be perfect race weather. We're just hoping that Friday night's going to be like this. We're looking at the 5-day. You know, we're not going to dwell on the weather. Every year at Sir Walter, it's rained a little bit, and then it's cleared up, and everybody's just ripped some fast times. So we're just going to let that happen. We're going to put it in the Pacers' hands and just go with it.
If I can just paint the picture, so let me just, you know, right here, I'm drinking a knockoff LaCroix, a cucumber melon sparkling water. Sitting beside Pat, who is rocking an old-school Nike retro tank with Golden State Warriors basketball shorts and moccasins. So I'm really just, I want you to understand kind of what we're about right now. And that's really laying the foundation for what an incredible episode.
High fashion.
That's just laying the foundation for what an amazing episode we are about to have. Now, Pat, who do we have to look forward to coming down here shortly?
Well, we're pumped today. As someone who has a name like Patrick, I couldn't be more excited to have the Irish national mile record holder, Ray Flynn, coming on tonight, just dropping knowledge about his career as a runner and his career as a super agent.
I tell you, it was great to have Ray Flynn of Flynn Sports Management come to Sir Walter last year. I'll tell you, Pat, I'll be honest with you. You know, we've had some dignitaries, Johnny Dutch being one. Of course, we've had college coaches as far away as Ole Miss come up. But when Ray Flynn came to our meet last year, I felt like we had reached another level. I don't know about you.
No doubt, yeah. Somebody like that who's been around the scene, you know, one of the things you'll hear in this episode, this is a fun episode where so far, Sandy and I have kind of traded off the interviews. This is one where we just freaking double down on the mastermind of Flynn Sports Management. He has so much knowledge of the sport, from competing to what he's doing now with the athletes. It's just one of those things that having him in the audience last year was awesome, and then digging in a little bit more on the interview we did with him. I think whether you're a fan of Sir Walter, if you're a fan of the mile, or you're a fan of track and field in general, or you know, professional sports management, you're going to get something from this.
Yeah, I mean, he truly is a sensei of all sorts. And so we are looking forward to sitting at the feet of Ray Flynn as he drops some gems on us. And we kind of dig into a lot of areas, talking about his Irish record, talking about, you know, kind of how he chooses and how he chooses athletes. And so it's going to be an incredible interview. So you guys get pumped up. Go ahead. And I don't know, wherever you're listening to this, just get relaxed. You know, get yourself in a good mental space and just get ready to enjoy this interview coming up.
Yeah, we're sitting on the side of a hill with some knockoff LaCroix. So, you know, if you see Sandy and I, just know we're looking out for you. We like the real thing. We know the price has gone up. They put the 12-packs back down to the 8-pack for the same price because William Needham Finley IV is driving up the price inside the Beltline.
It's, Pat, if I can just very quickly go off rail here, when did LaCroix get so big? Why did it get so big?
My mom was drinking LaCroix back in the 80s, and I never remember anybody liking it outside of Boysenberry Farms and places like that. So they have taken the world by storm, And it is good. It is very good.
Very refreshing. Clearly on a night like this, it just takes it to a whole other level. Clearly, you know, with the popularity and the price going up, though, it allows things for this Harris Teeter knockoff to come in and have an impact. So whether you're drinking a knockoff, if you're drinking a Cheerwine, which is also a North Carolina drink, Pepsi, which is another North Carolina drink, maybe just good old water, coffee if you're listening to this in the morning, just get ready to enjoy yourself as we bring you, from the People's Champs, Pat and Sandy, the Ray Flynn.
Here we go, folks. Enjoy this.
All right, well, guys, here we are on the Summer of Miles podcast, and real excited today to invite on the line with us, we have Ray Flynn, who is, the accolades are too many to count, but right now he is the founder of Flynn Sports Management. I'm going to go on a limb and say the preeminent sports agency for distance and, well, just for track athletes in the country. And not only that, but he is the Irish mile record holder at 349.77, which the little background was done 35 years ago this year. Ray, isn't that correct?
That's correct. In Oslo.
In the Dream Mile in Oslo. Exactly. I don't know how you let the American beat you there.
Yeah, well, that was a great event to be in, and we had three records that night, and Steve Scott won the race, of course, and just missed the world record by a couple of tenths, set the American record. And John Walker set the still-standing New Zealand record, and as well as my Irish record. So the New Zealand record, the Irish record are still good, and Alan Webb, of course, subsequently broke Steve's record. But yeah, it was a great night, great race to be in, and I'm honored to still hold the record for Ireland, yeah.
And Ray, one quick thing on that. I know this year they went to the Dream Mile is now the Junior Mile in Oslo. What do you think about that?
I think that they lost the corner on the market for the Dream Mile in Oslo quite a while ago. I think the individuality of the big meeting sometimes suffers when you have a brand even like the Diamond League. And, Oslo, I don't think is quite what it used to be. I was there actually this year. I went back there in June. And, I think they should never have let the Dream Mile name go. And I understand that the young boys are really good there now, the Ingebrigtsen brothers. I think they shouldn't give that name up on the Dream Mile, no.
Sure, sure. And one more question about that, Ray. I know growing up, you know, that track that they used to have at Oslo was a little different than everything else. It was almost perfect for distance because it was fewer lanes, so the fans were closer to the track. It seemed like when they redid it, that kind of lost that flavor. Do you think that had anything to do with the kind of change in that, or is that just the changing of the times?
I think it's the changing of the times, but you are correct. Six-lane tracks have an intimacy to them that bring the crowd closer, and it's almost like running indoors. And that was the case back in the day in Oslo, and it really felt like everybody was close in. And of course, when they redid the track and the stadium, it's a bigger track now, over eight lanes, of course. Yeah, I think they lost something there, but I think that it's more the times also that have changed. Monaco seems to be the preeminent place to run fast now.
Sure.
Now, Ray, you when did you actually start Flynn Sports Management?
I started in 1989 when I was finished up running, and I was not running so well anymore, and I decided to open an athlete management business based on the fact that I had been a journeyman on the circuit for so many years and had really learned the trade well, and I said it would be a good bridge for me into the business world.
Wow. So, I mean, when you started, was your goal to, I mean, just do distance runners since that's what you knew best? I know you have both, you represent both sprint and distance. What was your initial start or your thought for the vision of Flint Sports Management?
Well, you know, it wasn't like I had a long-term vision at the time. I couldn't really see so far beyond. But, of course, when your passion is middle-distance running, it's what's inside you. And that was where I first drew my interest in doing this line of work. And, of course, everything emanated from there. In 1994, I started representing a guy by the name of Donovan Bailey, and he subsequently won the World Championships in 95 and the Olympics in 96. So it did expand beyond, but I've always loved middle distance running as my passion, and it's always been close to my heart, and I seem to be in the middle of it.
Yeah, well, you've
over the years,
you've made quite the name for yourself outside of not only your own running, but even in the world of athlete sport representation. Tell me how, I mean, of course, starting in 1989, things have changed a little bit, social media being one of them. Talk to me a little bit about how athlete representation and that game has changed, and how you've seen that through these, I guess, almost 30 decades now. Have you seen some of the bigger changes you've noticed?
Well, I think it was a more social sport back in the day. There were less numbers. I think it's a much bigger business now. There are many more athletes who have access to the big competitions from global running. I think the third world athletes didn't quite have the same access to big races like they do today. And consequently, the races are far more competitive now than they ever were. You know, we were running a lot, but we were essentially running against many of the same faces. Compared to today's running, where you could be running against people from all over the world in different races, at any place and time. So that's one major change for sure. I think, it really wasn't a prize money circuit back in my day, and it has become a prize money circuit. It's very competitive, and, many athletes don't make a lot of money on the circuit. The top athletes do well, but when it's a prize money circuit, you can run ninth or tenth in the race and essentially not really make any money. It's difficult. Everybody has the perception that many of the top athletes are making a lot, but it's not everyone who's prospering. It's tough out there, I think, for many athletes.
Sure, sure. And that's one thing we wanted to talk about a little bit. You know, we have 9 of your athletes in our field of men and women this year, which we're always excited about. They always come and do well here. But to kind of talk about 2 different kind of ways things work, we're hoping you could kind of comment on, let's say, for instance, an athlete like Amanda Eccleston, who came out of college with not a lot of accolades, but has gotten, very good as she's come along, and versus someone like, Drew Hunter or Craig Engels, who are kind of one of the hotter names coming out. How does that change for you when you're looking at athletes to develop? And, when you're in something like Drew Hunter or Craig Engels, we assume there's some kind of like bidding war that goes on. How do you handle that?
Yeah, well, essentially, when athletes come out of college, if they are really at the top of their game, winning the NCAA championships or being really prominent in college, or even in Drew's case, where he's breaking national records in high school, there's a lot of interest commercially in athletes like this. And it really helps them in terms of getting endorsements, which really propel their careers or certainly give them the resources to take it to the next level. I think somebody like Amanda, she's really earned her way into a contract. And that's, again, going back to the previous question, one of the bigger differences. There really weren't many endorsement contracts back in the day when I was racing. And I think that many of the athletes you have in your competitions now are really funded in a great part by the bigger companies, the shoe companies, who really invest in such a great way in the sport. And if it weren't for those companies, I think it would be really difficult for the athletes to make it.
Sure, sure. I've got a couple follow-ups on that, but the first is in regards to an athlete like Craig who's coming out of college this year, with your knowledge of the sport and your history of competing on that level, when you're going to the shoe companies, I know every contract's a little bit different, but what are you telling the athlete that the longer deal is better or the shorter deal with more guaranteed money? Like, what is the kind of thought process that goes through your head when you're dealing with an athlete like that?
Well, you know, I would tell an athlete that any good deal will have an upside to it that has the possibility to make a lot of money for an athlete when they run well, in addition to the money they get when they sign. So an agent is going to provide incentives in the contracts that will really reward the athlete. If they make teams, they make U.S. teams, if they run under certain times, if they win medals, that they're not really, there's no penalty for having a contract that's 4 or 5 years if they really race and compete well, because the contract will really mirror what it's supposed to when they compete so well. So making a contract for 1 or 2 years doesn't really benefit so much an athlete, and most of the companies don't want to have a contract for a short period of years either.
Sure. And with that, Ray, my last follow-up on this particular subject was you mentioned the shoe companies. Now, do you foresee any time in the near future or even the distant future where there will be more opportunities for different sponsors to be, you know, more or less title sponsors in the sport, you know, where now the shoe companies kind of run things? Do you see, you know, somewhere where potentially like Coca-Cola or Google or Amazon could be the first name on the singlet?
I do. It's been done before. Yeah, there was a Mazda track club, the car company. There have been, you know, companies over the years who have come into the sport, but there really has to be a strategy. And you know, most companies are not as interested in our sport and haven't stayed there for the long haul. And that's why we see so many of the shoe companies, you know, dominating the landscape with sponsorship of athletes. It would be wonderful if more companies would come from outside, but really there's a lack of interested sponsors. And, you know, people will ask, well, why can't, let's say, Exxon sponsor one athlete? And really, companies don't want to, unless they have a strategy to really come into the sport in a bigger way, they don't do one-offs, so to speak. So I would love to see a greater visibility and a greater investment from companies beyond, running apparel and shoe companies in the business. But that's the reality of what we have, and I'm thankful that they're there. Without their support, we would be in trouble. But sure. Would be lovely to see it, and I wish more companies from outside would come in. It's my hope in the future that would be the case. But as you can see, when you look around, it's not the case today.
Definitely.
Yeah, Ray. Just kind of on one more strand on dealing with kind of these athletes and just the realities around this, you know, with the talk from certain prominent track athletes with ideas of collective bargaining and also ideas are really bringing to light kind of the how much these deals are actually for making that public knowledge or reduction clauses. How are you kind of helping to give these athletes an idea that they're dealing with not, you know, less friendly kind of business money-minded, you know, for the most part, shoe executives? How are you able to, I mean, because that's a harsh reality that they're looking for a return on investment. How are you helping athletes see the realities of this world?
Well, I think it is a business after all. And if you were working for an employer, you would be required to do a job and do it well. And if you weren't, then you probably wouldn't get promoted, or maybe the future wouldn't be bright. So as an agent, I do the best that I can to leverage opportunities among different sponsors and athletes to get them the best possible deal with the most increases to their base and the least reductions that they will face. But the reality is, too, that there's a responsibility if you're a professional athlete to compete and to compete well over a period. And also, in the bigger picture of things, if it was me or you, you don't want to be in a sport if you're not doing well. You'd rather find something else to do. Athletes are they have great futures off the track as well as on the track. So it's important to educate them and really talk about these the other part of life. And so if some of us are doing well, maybe that's the last place they need to be in the sport when they're struggling. And there are other things to do. And I think it's no disgrace if you don't make it in the sport more than 3 or 4 years. I think you probably have benefited in a great way. And so I think part of my job is in education also to say, hey, it's okay even if you don't succeed. And I think it's a wonderful opportunity for any athlete who can run at the professional level and compete for his or her country or even make the trials at the championships. I think they've all really succeeded in a great way. And so it's not only about money. I think it's about the opportunity to perform on a big stage, and however long it allows you to stay in the sport, that's really up to you. But again, win, lose, or draw, it's great if you are able to play at this level.
Yeah, there's no question. I think that's a huge fact. A balanced perspective is paramount. I think in success, not only when you're in it, you know, and running well, but also, you know, preparing for what life looks like after, you know, and that's reality. Yeah. Now, just again, along that, with the idea of, you know, again, results speak, and that's what people are looking for, contracts are looking for. But can you talk a little bit about what you've seen in terms of, again, newer in the past, you know, 5 to 10 years, but this idea of the social media or the personalized marketing that through blogs, Twitter, Instagram, and any number of other platforms that are important components of how athletes can make more of a name for themselves, but also have an impact on their brand. Can you? I don't think you personally have a Twitter, do you? I was wondering if...
Yeah, I do.
He's on there.
I do, actually, yeah.
Oh, there we go. I need to start following.
I do. Well, I think that the internet, in a bigger way, has been the engine that has, I think, propelled a great part of the emergence or reemergence of the success, especially of running in this country. I think the access to better coaching, to what other athletes are doing, which I know is I'm deviating a little bit from your question, but the internet, I think, has really opened up the channels for people in remote places to really compare what they're doing and to learn. And so that part of the opportunity to get to be a better athlete, I think, everybody's helped each other in that regard. When it comes to social media, yeah, I mean, I'm excited about the social media, and of course we can follow everything that's going on instantaneously now. But there is another side to it that, you know, one doesn't want to spend all their time tweeting because somebody famous said recently that the amount of tweeting that you do may be indexed to how not well you're competing as an athlete.
Yikes.
So overdoing it, you know, if you're tweeting more than running, then maybe something's wrong. I think then the correct balance, if you're doing well, then people want to hear what you have to say. If you're just talking about it all the time, it's not going to last too long. But the reality also is, if you're a bigger name, I think that companies now want you to be active on social media. And but there's only so many hours in a day, as you know. I went to a seminar recently and listened to experts from one of the major companies talking about Facebook and Snapchat and Twitter and Instagram and everything else. And I came out of it after an hour and a half thinking, if you really did everything they were saying, you would not do anything else in a 24-hour period. So I think it's a there's got to be, everything in moderation.
Absolutely. Now, you know, one thing I did, I just have to comment, and I stand corrected. Thank you. You are on Twitter. I think you tweet the right amount, can I say? So I think you found that balance. But what I think has come new to Flynn Sports Management in the past few years is your Instagram account, which I think one of your former interns who now works for you has. So I got to give a shout out to, I think his name is Matt Sonnenfeld.
Matthew. That's right.
Exactly. And he's brought creativity to a whole new level with every angle of track being covered through the Instagram. So great job, Matt. I just want to, you know, he paid me to say this, so I just wanted to put that out there.
No, Matt's great. He does a great job. And we have Brad Ewer that works for us, and he's terrific also. But Matt's young and vibrant and proactive and active on social media and especially Instagram. And he's done a good job.
Yeah, we love Matt. We're happy to have him come in town this weekend, which kind of leads us to our next question. We just had a couple more for you, Ray. We didn't want to keep you too long. But with Sir Walter, this is just one piece of the reemergence, or probably the actual emergence, I don't know if it was ever there before, of these miles on the East Coast. And there's been a lot of talk about kind of the repackaging of track and field all over the U.S. to make it popular and whatnot. So a couple points on that. Like, what is your thought of these meets like we're putting on? And, you know, what do you think are some changes that could be made to for the American people to maybe get into track a little bit more?
Well, actually, what I would say is the success of these mile races is extraordinary. And, of course, if you go back to Roger Bannister being the first man to run under 4 minutes in 1954 at the Iffy Road, people's imagination was captured by the four-minute mile, so a man running under 4 minutes for a mile, rather. And when you think about it, it's happened so many times over the years now. I mean, I think over 4,000 men have broken 4 minutes, run under 4 minutes for the mile in over the years. And still, the resonance of a sub-4 minute mile captures the average man's imagination. So you're putting on this great event in Raleigh, and people say, hey, I want to watch these guys run under 4 minutes. They get it. The average man understands a mile. They know how far. He knows how far it is. And to see somebody run under 4 minutes, even though technically speaking it's been done so many times, but it's new to the man in the street every time he watches it.
Sure.
And so it's quite amazing that you can put on mile race events and everybody loves them. The mile distance is the perfect distance because I drank the Kool-Aid when it comes to that. It's four laps, and you know, it's not too long, not too short. Everybody understands it, and it's the perfect strategy of racing. I love what's happened with it, and I think it has great possibilities for the future. And now more than ever, I think we're seeing these mile races like Sir Walter, and you have such a ringing, wonderful name for the race itself. it's beautiful to see the interest and the athletes, coming to your event. And I think you're to be congratulated and putting on such a wonderful series of races.
Well, Ray, we greatly appreciate those words. We're gonna hold on to that. What when you came out last year, I know that was your first time out. What surprised you about the environment or the atmosphere?
Well, I think again, what surprises me is that we all live in a cocoon ourselves, guys like me and you, and because we're from the sport, and we're sort of purists, all ex runners. We've all lived it at one level or another, but I think what I took from coming to the race last year is, you know, the people who just come down off the street who are going back up to the drink beer in the bar afterwards, you know, who want to see, want to witness a sub-4 minute mile. You know, it's new each time for so many people. And we take it for granted because we are sort of obsessed with running ourselves, so many of us. And but I think it's refreshing to witness new faces and people who are getting to experience runners running under 4 minutes. And with no disrespect to the ladies, it's just that the 4 minutes rings just so nicely for the average person.
Sure. And that's kind of why we started doing it. You know, I know Sandy and Logan and I, you know, the last time before the first year we put on Sir Walter that somebody had broken 4 minutes in the mile in Raleigh was 1974. So back in the days,
Tony Waldrop.
Yeah. Tony Waldrop, Reggie McAfee, those guys, those were the last
Tony
few.
Before, Tony set the world record too.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he had, I believe, the collegiate record until about 5 or 6 years ago. So
yeah,
there were fast milers around here.
Amazing runner. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think...
Yeah, the great traditions of...
Yeah, Ray, and just to your point, I think that's what we get most excited about. We've marketed, you know, and through the events that we put on throughout the summer, we kind of have the running community in Raleigh behind us, you know, by our outreach and just letting them know and getting them excited. But I think for us, what gets us really pumped is when we have these partnerships or get people who come out who don't even run or could care less or never been to a track meet, come out and say, man, this was, we had a guy who told us he'd been to the Masters, the Ohio State Michigan game and the Indy 500 and being on the track for a sub four was the most exciting thing he'd ever been a part of.
Well, there you go.
That's the win.
It's quite amazing. And now we live in a world where people are running ultra runs and they're, I know a guy that just ran a 300 mile run. I mean, it's beyond my imagination what people do now. And, I think it gets back to the simplicity of the 4 minute mile. I think, to your point, it's new and attractive to, we have to think outside of where we live. We live in this running, little running community, but the average person really, their imagination is captured by it. Remember that the two most amazing barriers back in the 50s were Sir Edmund Hillary climbing Mount Everest for the first time and Sir Roger Bannister running under 4 minutes. They were the two most amazing feats in that time, and people can get to see a sub 4 minute mile each and every time people like you stage it. That's what's remarkable.
Well, I think we're seeing also, too, a resurgence. Like you said, we got distances and people going longer and slower. But I think I saw an Outside magazine article that talked about, actually, it's more impressive to go shorter and faster. And I think, you know, Nick Willis has been an advocate for this with his new Miler Method boot camp. Just, hey, Willis, let's not train people to go run a half marathon or a marathon. Let's get them to PR in a mile. Because they've definitely, you know, to your point, they've run a mile, whether it was elementary or for a high school sport. They can relate to the mile, and so let's see if we can't help people get back and run a fast mile. I think so. Even with people starting to the resurgence of people coming back to shorter, more high intensity speed, I think that we're capitalizing on that movement.
I agree. I couldn't agree more. I think you're making it new again. You know, people are running 10Ks and different distances, and now half marathons and marathons, but people can always want to know, even me, you know, I say to myself, I wonder what I could run a mile in now. Wouldn't be very quick, but nevertheless, you always sort of challenge in your mind, what could you do? And so I think it's people can think, oh, I can run a mile. At least I can run a mile. So it's there in all of us.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Well, we only got one or two more for you here, Ray, but one thing we talked about before we called you this afternoon was with your career in the sport as an athlete and now as an agent for many years, what's something that just gets you excited these days with everything that's going on?
Well, that's a good question. Sometimes I see a lot of racing, and I think it's the championship races that get me the most excited. I mean, I'm going to go to London this week for the World Championships. I think I just like the purity of the races. While I say it's great to see a trial and time trial and somebody trying to break a record, I think what gets me most excited are watching those 1500 meter races where you've got seven guys coming off the turn and you don't know who's going to win. And, you know, there's so much hype with it. I'm fortunate to get to go to a lot of great competitions. And I love the excitement of the racing still. And I think that's what keeps me going.
Well, we're going to hope to provide that at Sir Walter this year. Hopefully we'll, with our incentives and all the things we got coming for the athletes, hope we'll have something along those lines. This is not really a question. I'm just going to, from my end, and from this point, I don't know if you've caught any of our other podcasts, but earlier this summer, or a couple weeks ago, we had Megan Moy, who just signed with you and Hoka. She's obviously had a great career at NC State here in Raleigh, and then, of course, now with Hoka up at New Jersey, New York Club. And but, you know, we brought her on the podcast for where she made the announcement that she was joining you guys and Hoka. So I just want to say, you know, I'm hoping that you might be able to, you know, when you're trying to get athletes to join your stable, you can say, hey, I got a great podcast with some great co-hosts that would love to have you on. And we'll really get you an audience with you signing on to Flint Sports Management. How does that sound?
That sounds like a deal to me.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that's a great pitch right there. That's a winning pitch right there. I'm going to tell Matt to bring that up.
We had Craig on,
too. Like I feel like I have a really great connection with all things NC State, starting with Coach Geiger. And, of course, he's a legend up there and a great person, in addition to being, you know, such a great coach over the years. And with Laurie and, you know, the staff up at NC State. And, yeah, the many athletes they produce over the years, they really have set the bar high and, you know, put so many people in the right direction over the years, and I've got great admiration for them.
Yeah, well, we got a nice little NC State crew lined up on the line, both male and female. And one of these years, we're gonna get another one of your athletes, Ryan Hill, to come on home and hop on the line for Sir Walter. One of those years when he doesn't make the world team.
That's right. Yeah, he's done well this year, and I'm looking forward to watching him over in London here in the next 10 days.
Yeah. Well, Ray, listen, I really appreciate you making the time to join us. This is a real honor to have you on. We were honored when you made the trip down to Raleigh. And again, thanks for having some of your athletes come and join us this Friday. But really, again, thanks for spending some time and answering questions, opening up. And again, honored to have you on. I know Pat and I agree that you have done so much for the sport. And we're just trying to continue in that incredible legacy that you've created and with your athletes and even with the meet. And so I'm gonna leave with this. We hope to get you in Raleigh here sometime soon. And you know, there is always an open invite to the Sir Walter Miler whenever it fits into your busy schedule.
For sure.
Well, I want to wish you all the very best of luck for good weather this weekend. I know you have great field set up, but the experience is good and everybody enjoys the event because it's really so well put together. I'm sorry I'm not there, but I certainly hope that you have an even better event and experience this year.
Well, thanks, Ray.
All right, thank you.
All right, guys, wrapping up another exciting episode, a little bit outside the box. Ray will not be running the Sir Walter Miler this year, but if he would have 35 years ago, it's fair to say he would have won by a good 40, 50 yards.
Greatest travesty that I got coming out of that was that the dream mile is now a junior dream mile.
Yeah, I think most of us that have been watching track for a long time, I'm glad I was able to bring up that six-lane track in Oslo, and Ray instantly knew what I was talking about. So, you know, not everybody's going to be a track dork like I am or like we are, but these things matter to people. That's why we let people in as close as possible outside of lane four. We want to bring back that dream mile magic.
Yeah, and I appreciate Ray, obviously, some powerful insights of, you know, being in the sport and the industry for a long time. And one of the things I took away was just he speaks truth. I mean, he, you know, not only does he have the wisdom, but I think he does want the athletes to understand what they're getting into. He wants the best for them, and I think he wants the best for them outside the sport as well. Even the education of when it's time to kind of hang up the spikes. I think just that good old kind of European, Irish, tell it like it is. You know, sometimes, listen, you know, kind of like some of the British, you know, TV series. Don't keep going on after season 5. Cut it. Go out on top.
No doubt. I think Tenacious D said it as well. Work as hard as you can, and if it ain't going so well, stop.
And with that mic drop, we're going to go ahead and wrap up this podcast of Episode 8. Again, I appreciate Ray coming on, obviously being a big supporter of Sir Walter. I want to say best of luck to all his athletes that will be competing, of course, at Worlds in London, and then those that will be, of course, with us at Sir Walter. I know that in his stead, we will have his trusty sidekick, Matthew Sonnenfeld, a former teammate of mine. So he'll be holding down for the Flynn Sports management team.
That's right. Yeah, tomorrow, stay tuned. We will have a nice interview with 2015 Sir Walter Miler champ, Steph Garcia. So thanks for listening to the Summer of Miles podcast. Hit us up, summerofmiles@gmail.com, all the social media. Send this to your friends, SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, you name it. We're looking forward to hearing from you. And we're only a few days away from the Sir Walter Miler 4. Good night.
Peace out.